Chapter 20. That night I received in my sleep further information about Sadasa Sylvia. In the dream, which shone in vivid, sparkling, lit-up colors, a great leather-bound book was held up to me. I saw its cover clearly. In gold leaf was stamped, Aramchek. The book was opened by invisible hands and then laid on a table. All at once, who should show up but Ferris F. Fremont, with his sullen face and heavy jowls, scowling. Ferris Fremont took a large red fountain pen and wrote his name in the book, which I could see was a lined ledger. Now came an old lady with white hair tied up in a bun. She wore a white uniform such as nurses wear, and she peered through thick glasses like Sadasa's, smiling in a busy, efficient way. The old lady shut the ledger and hurried off with it under her arm. She resembled Sadasa, and as I witnessed all this, a voice spoke, the familiar quasi-human AI voice I had come to recognize.
Her mother.
That was all. One printed word, two spoken words, just three words in all. But instantly awake, I sat up in bed, then got up and left the bedroom to fix myself a cup of coffee. Aramchek was, of course, her mother's name. Aramchek, Sadasa's mother. Her mother signing up none other than Ferris F. Fremont. But signing him up to what? Aramchek, the ledger had said. Her name, the name of a covert subversive organization. A red fountain pen, much like that I had bought Sadasa. Red, subversive, signed up, Sadasa's old mother. Jesus Christ, I said to myself as I sat in the living room waiting for the coffee water to boil. It was not a dream. It was an information printout, clear, economical, and direct. It had pulled no punches. Like a political cartoon, it had conveyed its message by graphic and verbal means, word and picture combined. And in conjunction with a literal printout came a flood of auxiliary information supplied by the same source. This was why my meeting Sadasa was so important. Not Sadasa, but her mother, who was now dead. I knew that, understood that. The scene I had witnessed happened years ago, when Ferris Fremont was young. He had been in his late teens. It was during World War II, before America got in. Mrs. Aramchek was an organizer for the Communist Party, and she had recruited the teenage boy Ferris Fremont. They both lived on the same block in Placentia. The party had been active among the Mexican-Americans who picked crops in Orange County. Signing up the Fremont boy was an accidental spin-off. It had not been a one-shot deal, a mere interlude in Ferris Fremont's youth. Because of his personality traits, unscrupulousness and deathless ambition to rise to power over other humans, lack of any fixed value system, and underlying nihilism, Ferris had proved to be exactly what Mrs. Aramchek was looking for. She had buried the facts of his party membership and put him in a special category. Ferris Fremont would be her sleeper, to grow unannounced until the day came, if it could be manipulated into coming, when he held office on the American political scene. This was grave and frightening, this awareness I now had. Sadasa knew that her mother had been an organizer for the California branch of the CPUSA. She had been a child then, and automatically recruited. She had seen Ferris Fremont, and later, when he entered politics after her mother's death, she had recognized him. She had never told anyone, however. She was afraid to. No wonder she had changed her name. I wished fervently that my invisible friends had not conferred this knowledge on me. It was too much. And not only this knowledge, but acquaintanceship with Mrs. Aramchek's still-living daughter. What the hell was next? Sadasa Aramchek, as she herself knew, as perhaps only she knew, was a living witness to the fact that the President of the United States was a sleeper for the Communist Party. That, in fact, as the communications network continued to draw my thinking along the lines of truth, the CP, in conjunction with Soviet political assassins, no doubt trained by the KGB, had taken over the United States in the name of anti-communism. Sadasa Aramchek, who was in remission from lymphatic cancer, knew this. I knew this. The party in the USSR, or at least members of it, knew this. And Ferris Fremont knew this. The shoo-ad would have wiped me out. One less who knew it. A poisoned arrow from God knew who aimed at my heart a few days before I met Sadasa. Coincidence? Maybe. But no wonder Vallis and his AI web operators had emerged to protect me overtly. I had been only hours away from falling victim to FAP, on the eve of encountering the girl I was to link up with. The antagonist had almost aborted us, powerful as my friends were. Only the omniscience of Vallis had warded it off. How close, I thought, it had been. And what was I supposed to do? Why had Vallis selected me out of hundreds of millions of people? Why not an editor of a large newspaper, or a TV newsman, or a famous writer, or one of Ferris's political foes? I remembered an earlier dream, then, starkly, and my heart slowed almost to a halt, thudding with discomfort. The dream of a record album of Sadasa Sylvia, which meant, graphically and obviously, Sadasa Sylvia Sings. That had been the title of the album. I remembered now, although at the time it seemed self-evident that the first LP by Sadasa Sylvia should be called that, the other meaning of the verb sing, to spill her story out. As an executive of Progressive Records, I could sign her up, and now I looked back, impressed and awed, at how I had been maneuvered to this valuable point, this position in a successful Burbank recording firm with many top folk artists under contract. Starting back years ago, the pre-vision of what I took to be Mexico, I would have been worth nothing as a record clerk in Berkeley. What could I have done then? Now I could do something. Sadasa played a guitar. She was good enough, despite what she said, to own and play a Gibson, the most expensive and professional acoustic guitar in the business. And she wrote lyrics. The fact that she could not or would not sing was not important. Any singer could sing her lyrics. Progressive supplied material to its singers routinely. There were singers who couldn't write and writers who couldn't sing. We matched them up when necessary. We were the master brokers. We were where it all came together. And there was less FAP supervision of folk music than there was of the news media. TV, radio, news programs, and magazines. They looked only for songs protesting the Vietnam War. It was simple-minded censorship in the medium of pop music, because the messages were invariably simple-minded. Sadasa Sylvia was a smart, educated girl. I had a deep intuition that her lyrics were not obvious, at least not on the first go-round. Maybe on reflection, as the implications gradually sank in. Through our distributors, we were in a position to market a new folk artist on radio stations, in record stores and drugstores and supermarkets, with ads, even concerts, across the entire United States simultaneously. And Progressive had a good reputation for keeping its nose clean. We had never gotten into trouble with FAP, as had some offbeat record firms. The closest FAP had come, to my knowledge, was their pitch to me to report on novice artists, and I had had the clout to throw that off. Novice artists. Had the two fat-necked, middle-aged fappers who'd approached me been thinking specifically of Sadasa? Was she being watched? Surely Ferris Fremont would have her watched. But perhaps he didn't know she existed. It showed how risky this all was, the visit by the two fappers so recently, with Sadasa coming just now. First the two fappers, then the shoe ad in the mail, now Sadasa. Fallas had timed his intervention precisely. It could not have been delayed. Things were in motion, for me and for Phil. Consider his visitors, too. We were both being watched constantly, or at least I had been until I phoned FAP and gave them my pitch, Vallis's pitch. Perhaps I was temporarily free of supervision, Vallis having arranged it with this in mind, my meeting with Sadasa. Her lyrics, I reflected, set to surefire ballads, when repeated over and over again on AM rock stations, would certainly get across to a large audience. And if her information were put in subliminal form, the authorities might not... Subliminal form. Now, for the first time, I comprehended the purpose of my nasty experience with the gross subliminal messages I had managed to transliminate. That, regrettably, had been necessary. I had to become consciously aware, in a manner I could never forget, of what could be done with subliminal cueing in popular music. People listening while half asleep, absorbing by night what they would soon think and believe the next day. Okay, I said to Vallis in my head. I forgive you for putting me through that ordeal. You made your point all right, so it's fine. I guess there was no way to inform me of everything at once. It had to unfold in successive stages. A further insight came to me, sharp and lucid. My friendship with Phil, him and his dozens of popular science fiction thrillers bought in drugstores and Greyhound bus stations, is a false lead. That is what the authorities are looking for, something showing up in those pulp novels. Those are winnowed thoroughly by the intelligence community, every single one. We, too, in the recording industry, are winnowed, but more for pro-dope subtracks, pro-dope and sexually suggestive stuff. It is in the field of science fiction that they look for political material. At least, I thought, I hope so. I don't think we could get away with this as material stuck into a book, even subliminally. I think in pop tunes we have a better chance, and evidently that is what Vallis feels, too. Of course, I realized, if we're caught, they'll kill us. How will Sadasa feel about that? She's so young. And then I remembered the sad fact that she was in temporary remission from cancer. She could only expect to live a little while. It was a deeply sobering thought, But Sadasa did not have that much to lose. And probably she would see it that way. Before they get her, the lymphoma would. Perhaps this was the underlying reason why Sadasa had approached a recording firm for a job. An unconscious awareness that at a recording firm her story might be... But I was speculating now. The AI operators had not coached my thinking along these lines, nor had they led me to wonder if Sadasa had been afflicted with cancer in order to push her to make public what she knew. It was my own individual mind conjecturing about that. I doubted it. More likely that was coincidence. And yet, I had heard it said that God brought good out of evil. The cancer was evil, and Sadasa had it. Wasn't this something good, which Valis had managed to extricate from it?